The Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, Mondays at 5 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? It's the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour, with guests and callers seeking the truth about psychiatry and psychotherapy, and how you can make the most of your own life, right here on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bragan, and this is the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour. Tonight's hour is filled with different aspects, I would say, of humanity and human life and tragedy and triumph and strength and frailty. It begins with a subject that I've been deeply concerned about, which is the dangerousness of the SSRI antidepressants, the so-called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. That is, drugs that try to block the removal of the neurotransmitter serotonin from its active site in the synapse. These drugs attempt to flood the brain with serotonin. Not a rational thing to do, and the results are often disastrous. The initial drug was Prozac, and of course, my wife Ginger and I wrote the book talking back to Prozac. But then came Zoloft, or sertraline, and Paxil, or paroxetine, and Celexa, and other of these newer antidepressants. And in fact, not just the SSRIs, but drugs like Effexor or venlafaxine, which is specifically meant to do more than just block the reuptake of serotonin, and drugs like Wellbutrin, all the newer antidepressants have the potential to produce cocaine-like, amphetamine-like behavioral reactions of either extreme overstimulation with violence and anger and upset and mania and irrationality of all kinds. I have many legal cases where people have gotten out of control on these drugs, and even during withdrawal from these drugs. They also have the capacity to produce crashing, either when they're being taken or during withdrawal, crashing into despair and suicidality. The warnings, the label warnings, address suicide attempts and suicide thoughts up to about age 24. But if you read through the label more thoroughly and you read the literature, you can see that all these warnings apply to all ages. And the scientific literature confirms these risks of disastrous behavioral outcomes. In addition, these drugs can be very toxic in a neurological fashion that's called a serotonin syndrome, and variations on that, which can be fatal, which can involve fever and abnormal movements and delirium and spasticity and other problems. These are very toxic agents. And unfortunately, they're not only given to adults, they're given to children. But if you look at the literature on children and these drugs, you'll find 6-7 studies, many controlled clinical trials, other observational trials, in which half or more of the children given these drugs, half or more in some of these studies, usually at least a third of the children will develop behavioral abnormalities on these drugs, behavioral abnormalities, including suicidality, violence, mania. Children are more susceptible, no surprise, to the effects of these drugs. That's why one reason we don't like children to smoke and drink because we assume it's worse for them than for us. Furthermore, these drugs interfere with growth and development. They disrupt biochemical functioning. And if it were only serotonin that was disrupted, that would be bad enough because serotonin goes into every nook and cranny of the brain. It literally spreads into every nook and cranny of the brain, and you can find serotonin throughout the body, in the blood, in the gut. So to mess with it is to mess with the whole brain and the whole body. Beyond that, it's not even safe to come off these drugs because the brain adapts to them. The brain fights them and adapts and compensates. And the result of that is that when you try to stop these drugs, you can go into serious withdrawal with all the other problems that you can get from the direct toxicity in terms of getting the high manic, aggressive, irritable kind of reaction, as well as the crashing into depression and suicidal feelings and acts. In addition, these drugs are so numbing when taken long-term that now textbooks speak of an apathy syndrome. And I've seen marriages and relationships ruined by the apathy and indifference that develops in one of the partners, sometimes combined with a manic, I'm on my way to bigger and better things, which ends in disaster. My guest today is Matthew Downing. And Matthew will tell you about her daughter, Candace, whom she lost at the age of 12 on January 11th, 2004, to the effects of Zoloft or sertraline. I was a medical expert in her case, working with a fine attorney out of Maryland, Carl Protill. The case was settled, as best as I can tell, to the satisfaction, as much as one could get, to Matthew and her family. And we're going to tell you the story of Matthew and her family, her daughters. And we're going to talk about the psychiatric reform movement and what Matthew's doing to further that. And one final word before introducing Matthew Downing to you. And Matthew is spelled M-A-T-H-Y. Matthew presented a marvelous panel at last year's April meeting of the Center for the Study of Empathic Therapy, Education and Living at the Empathic Therapy meeting or conference. And she's going to present another panel, also with some new unfortunate tragedies. Certainly the most moving experience of the first conference, and I'm sure it's going to be profoundly meaningful at the second conference, which is going to be April 13 through 15 this year, 2012, in Syracuse. You can find out about the conference. You can read about Matthew, who's on our advisory council, at empathictherapy.org. Matthew, hello, and a deep, warm welcome to the show.
Hello, Peter. I appreciate so much the chance to speak with you and with your public in regards to this horrific situation, and appreciate so much what you have done personally along with Ginger to bring this tragedy to light. As you mentioned, you were one of the expert witnesses on our case. There is never a happy resolution when a child dies in such a manner. You can't put a monetary figure on the death of a loved one. That's such a needless tragedy. But we did have positive results, both emotionally and, I would say, professionally. And I'm pleased that our family has been a part of the positive reform that has been taking place since 2004 when Candace died.
Would you like to tell us some of Candace's story, and I can put in some of the science if necessary along the way, of what just happened to your daughter?
Yeah, I'll be happy to, and again, just chime in wherever you see fit. Candace was just a beautiful child. She was an honor student. She was an athlete. She was probably the most popular child I've ever met. We used to laugh about her social schedule because she wouldn't plan for just one activity a day. It was usually two or three, and she was a child that just everyone loved. But she was an anxious child and did suffer from anxiety, especially in regards to taking tests at school. And it worried me because of her level of discomfort. And it got to the point that she would freeze when she went to answer questions on a test, or she would write so illegibly that even if her answers were correct, they were marked wrong. And when I spoke to her pediatrician about it, they did not recommend medication. They felt that she was from such a caring family and such an exceptional school that her needs were being met, but I continued to be concerned, so they suggested that I seek the advice of a child psychiatrist. I'm very upset to say that I followed that advice. Unbeknownst to us, the child psychiatrist that was recommended really was nothing more than a psychopharmacologist. He talked to Candace for about 10 minutes and immediately put her on Zoloft. Ironically, he gave her a sample pack of Zoloft and told me, just have her take the little pills and then you can give your husband the rest or whatever. So there was no thorough diagnosis. There was no kind of testing. There was no blood work done.
Now,
there
just
was...
to clarify, your husband was already taking Zoloft. He didn't say, okay, a little for your daughter and, by the way, for your husband. So he was just giving the extra samples to your husband?
Yes, and again, that's a completely different situation, but my husband had been given Zoloft by the physician's assistant because he was having problems sleeping and was irritable, and they said, oh, well, you're depressed, that's why you have problems sleeping, therefore we're giving you this Zoloft, again, with no kind of medical check or background. It was 5 years later when we found out that the reason for my husband's irritability was he had severe sleep apnea.
Right.
Following surgery for the sleep apnea, he no longer has sleep apnea, but he is addicted to Zoloft and has made several attempts to try and get off Zoloft himself. And as you mentioned earlier, the withdrawal symptoms were so severe that he just couldn't do it. The tremors would become so severe that, like I said, he's tried a couple of times, and now he can't get off Zoloft. So, again, that's a completely different situation. But, yes, you're right. The psychopharmacologist said, oh, we'll just give those to your husband. So there was no medical check. There's really, it's difficult to check medically, but no blood work was done or anything at any time for either my husband or my daughter.
So go on now and with this this story. Your daughter's 11 years old. She's been
Yes. Put
on Zoloft.
She was put on a low dose of Zoloft, and she was told, well, this is going to help you feel better. And one thing that I've been reading a lot of is if a doctor tells a child, we're giving you this medicine, you're going to feel better, how much of that is actually psychological?
Sure.
It's the placebo effect. In retrospect, we know that she didn't need it at all. At the same time that he did that, I met with the school team, and they came up with a list of ways to decrease Candace's anxiety during test-taking. She was an artist. She was allowed to draw her answers. She was allowed to give her answers orally. She could take the test by herself without being in a classroom full of other children. And the school came up with an exceptional list of ways to decrease her level of anxiety. One thing I have been told since is that she was trying to fight off the effects of the Zoloft at the same time that all of these guards were in place for her to help her be more successful, more comfortable. So I can't say that Zoloft did anything for her. Personally, she told me that what helped her feel less stressful was high levels of physical activity. She was a ball player in every sense of the word, soccer, basketball, lacrosse. She swam in the summer, and she felt that it was high levels of physical activity that really decreased the stress, not the Zoloft.
You know, this is so amazingly, ridiculously bad medicine that I want to really summarize, you know, what you're saying for folks. Mm-hmm. And, of course, I've read all the records. This was a perfectly normal, happy, creative, artistic, highly athletic, loving child who had test anxiety.
Correct. And kids don't die from test anxiety.
And they shouldn't get Zoloft.
And they shouldn't get Zoloft.
So then what happened?
Well, this year, again, you're right, she began on the Zoloft when she was 11 in the sixth grade. By the end of the summer, the psychiatrist told me that because she was going to seventh grade, there were going to be higher levels of transition, and he really needed to double the amount of Zoloft she was taking. I was very much against this, and I will never forget what he said to me. He said, what are you worried about? Zoloft is safe and effective. Kids take 2 to 3 times more Zoloft than your daughter's taking without any problem at all. There are no side effects.
She actually said no side effects.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
That there were absolutely no problems at all. What was I worried about? I didn't know. I didn't know anybody. We're told to trust the doctors. We're told that doctors take a Hippocratic oath, stating, you know, do no harm. And I believed him, but we never saw any difference in the way that she was, except that she had begun having hand tremors, which concerned me. And ironically, shortly before she died, I had seriously considered taking her to a neurologist because I was concerned about the shaking in her hands. And looking back, I think it was a side effect of the Zoloft.
Yeah, I think she was definitely getting toxic. So go on and now and talk about what happened next. She's on the Zoloft. She's in school.
I mean, there was never a point in time where this child had any of the symptoms of suicidality. Nothing. So there was no warning that we would be facing this. She had been very ill in December of 2003. She had that awful flu that was going around. So she was in a weakened state. Now, one thing that the psychiatrist had also told Ken is if you ever get nervous about returning to school, like if you're nervous the night before a test, just take another Zoloft at night before you go to bed, and that'll decrease your anxiety. Again, in retrospect, I've learned that that's absolutely not considered a practice and a way that Zoloft should be taken. So what happened was when Candace was getting ready to return to school in the new year, she had missed about a week of school with the flu, and she was nervous about being behind, which she was, and we had had a tutor in the meantime, but she was nervous about returning to school, so she took an extra pill in the evening. I was in the shower. Usually my husband or I gave her the pill, but this time she got the pill herself, and I took a shower. When I came back, I realized she was edgier than normal. She was shaky, and she was speaking very loudly, and she seemed paranoid. When my daughter and I asked her, why are you speaking so loudly, she got very defensive about it, and I asked her to show me what she had taken, and she had accidentally taken one of my husband's pills, which were twice the strength of hers. I called the pediatrician and explained what had happened and the symptoms I saw, and they told me to call poison control. And when I called poison control, they told me that they thought she had serotonin syndrome and that they wanted me to take her to the hospital for monitoring. So I put her in the car, and on the way to the hospital, she started getting extremely nauseous from the pill. By the time we got to the hospital, she didn't even make it into the ER waiting room without vomiting the one pill she had taken. So we knew without a doubt that it had been one pill that had brought on these symptoms. This was not something that was premeditated on her part, that was absolutely accidental. By the time she was seen in the ER, her blood pressure was up. So they placed her in the pediatric emergency room and immediately gave her Versed. There was no monitoring at all. They just immediately shot her with a sedative. The sedative reacted very strongly with the amount of Zoloft in her system, and she began hallucinating immediately. Again, in retrospect, in reading nursing manuals, I saw that not only had they given her twice the amount of Versed you would ever give a child, but they put it through an IV push. They gave her the full double dose immediately rather than titrating it through a saline solution so that they could look for reactions. And it just went from bad to worse from that. She began hallucinating. She was seriously ill, very physically ill. Her heart rate kept going up until it was twice the rate it should have been. She started running a fever, and they couldn't bring her blood pressure down. So here's a child that was perfectly fine an hour ago, and now she's in the throes of hallucinating, feverish, vomiting, very, very sick. They followed that with an IV push of Ativan, which made the hallucinations become very dark. She thought she was bleeding. She thought I was bleeding. She thought I had ants coming out of the top of my head. She saw spiders walking on the walls. She thought her blanket had become a web, and she couldn't get out of the web. It was horrific. And then they brought a doctor in to tell me, well, we're not releasing your daughter. She's going to have to go to pediatric intensive care, and was monitored around the clock because at that point they thought she would become suicidal, but they never bothered to tell me. They also did not inform me that they had enlarged her heart by the medications they'd given her and that the left ventricle of her heart was now enlarged. None of this was ever told to me in the hospital.
Let me take a minute and sort of encapsulate some of the things that we need to look at here and to think about. Your daughter accidentally takes double the intended dose of Zoloft.
Yes, but it was a dose that she never should have taken anyway.
Right.
You don't give that medication in that way.
No, you don't give it as a PRN for anxiety,
right,
which is what was being done.
Right.
But nonetheless, this dose is the kind of dose that psychiatrists unscrupulously give anyway to kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing here an experiment. It's literally a scientific experiment of tragic proportions. The child has no idea that she's taken extra Zoloft. And so what happens is strictly a biochemical effect. If you don't believe that drugs can make people crazy, here's proof. Because here's this wonderful youngster who takes the overdose accidentally, but not an overdose in the sense of some psychiatrist certainly could have prescribed it, and she becomes paranoid and suspicious and hyper and simply not herself.
Right.
Then she ends up in the hospital, and the hospital describes the following. This is what I gleaned out of the record of her condition to show you the physicality of it. She's got tachycardia, which is an elevated heart rate. She's got hypertension. She's got tachypnea, which is an elevated breathing. She's got tremors, jittery, nauseous. She's seeing double. Soon she will have an elevated temperature. And Matthew, in describing her daughter's deterioration, is really following the record in that she gets worse when she's given this very potent drug, Versed, which shouldn't have been used in the way it was used, in my opinion.
In my opinion also, and in the nursing manual.
And there's a note at 18 minutes after midnight that says, I'm quoting, "Mom concerned the medicine we gave is causing child symptoms." And then at 38 minutes after, "Mom states child is still jerky, shaky, and states child is hallucinating." So here is Mom on top of things, trying to tell people what in the world is going on, and things are clearly not going well.
I have to add, Dr. Bragan, that I asked the emergency room doctor, "What have you done to my daughter?" And her response was, "I have no idea. I'm calling poison control."
Yeah.
And then she followed that with, "Well, if these don't work, we have a lot of other sedatives we can try." And those were her responses to me as a concerned parent.
Yeah.
And what upset me in the hospital records is they take no responsibility for it, and they simply state, "Mother states, what have you done to my child?"
Well, I did find one note where they sort of, in a narrative, say both medications caused her symptoms to worsen. But you're basically right. You're the one calling all of this to their attention.
Mm-hmm.
Her diagnosis in the emergency room is medication-induced psychosis due to Zoloft and Ativan. That's a quote. They left out the Versed.
Yeah, well, the Versed is what started the hallucinations.
Yes.
The Ativan just made the hallucinations much worse and what I would consider just very dark, very horrific. The Versed hallucination, she saw fish flopping on the ceiling. She saw monkeys climbing poles. But they were silly, and they made her giggle. When they gave her the Ativan, they became very dark and very, very scary.
Ativan, all of the Ativans are benzodiazepine tranquilizers. They can all act as downers. Now, the additional diagnosis was serotonin syndrome, which I mentioned to you guys, I mentioned on the show, in the beginning of the show, due to accidental overdose of Zoloft. She's admitted to the hospital, and we'll pick up on that in a minute. We're going to take a break in about 2 minutes. Tell us about what it was like. And by the way, if you stay and listen to this show, folks, you're going to be anxious about ever going into a hospital.
That's true.
You're going to be scared to death. You're going to know that you need somebody by your side to make sure you're not one of the hundreds of thousands of victims of mismanaged medication in hospitals. And in my experience, psychiatry is probably the worst. What were your feelings at this time? Just take a minute or two, Matthew, and describe to folks, what is it like? Your daughter's being wheeled up to inpatient. What's going through your mind? What's going on?
When they came to tell me that Candace was not being released from the ER, but instead being taken to pediatric intensive care, the first thing I said is, "Please promise me you will not give her any more drugs. Please promise me." And I'll never forget it. The doctor looked at me and he said, "We can't promise that." She was wheeled up to the pediatric unit. And as I said, they had a monitor. They had a person who was paid to sit and watch Candace's vitals and make sure that she didn't kill herself. I do want to note that I never left my child's sight. She was so terrified that I actually ended up laying in the hospital bed with her because it was the only way at all she could be comforted. And from this time forward, my child never slept through the night and really never ate again. So it was horrible. She was very weak. She couldn't walk to the bathroom by herself. I had to physically take her. She was thirsty for water all the time. For whatever reason, they would not bring her water. They would only bring her milk. This was a child who was lactose intolerant. They absolutely disregarded anything that I said I needed for my child. At the same time, not bothering to explain to me what the purpose of the person sitting in the chair watching her was for. I mean, it was absolutely, I was kept in the dark about anything that was going on. She felt horrible. She was terrified. The hallucinations did not stop. They were round the clock. It was terrifying. As her parent, it was terrifying. And I know that she was terrified. It's one reason, like I said, she couldn't even stand the fact that I was on the other side of the bars of the bed. I had to be right on the bed with her. So at no time did I leave this child's sight. I was there 24 hours a day. She went in on a Sunday, and she was discharged on Wednesday evening.
Now, let me tell folks, we're going to take a break in a few seconds, that you're not going to believe what happens next to Candace in the psychiatric. She on a psych ward at this point?
No,
she's on
in
a medical
pediatric
ward.
Intensive care.
Yes, she's right. She's
for
on
the
pediatric PICU. Intensive.
Right.
Where you'd expect that folks would know what they were doing, but the problem, a big part of the problem, is that Candace is now being seen as a psychiatric patient, and with psychiatric patients, even if they are in a horribly toxic state, you always got to be careful from a drug. You always got to be careful that someone isn't going to want to give her another psychiatric drug, because that's what psychiatrists seem to know how to do. Let's go to break, and we'll be back in a little bit and talk about what happened to this little child.
You are listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour on the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned, stay in touch, and call in with your questions at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Have you heard? The Burt Cohen Show brings you the hidden truths behind the stories that affect us all and gives you the information you need to build freedom, community, and a much better world. This is Burt Cohen. My past shows include The New Media Power of Comcast, Socialism for Wall Street Only, and How to Empower Your Own Community Over Corporate Interests. For archives, go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and listen to The Burt Cohen Show every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. The Burt Cohen Show. There's really nothing like it.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No. Don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off. I said not to play it.
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny.
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. I've been on radio for 37 years, every day. And I'm pleased that the Progressive Radio Network exists, because this is the one forum that brings together some of the most important, probing, creative, and dynamic minds on the planet. Join us each and every day, 24/7, on the Progressive Radio Network, your home for independent thinking.
Driving you crazy? Do you have a cheating boyfriend or girlfriend? An ex you can't let go of? An obnoxious boss? Adult kids who won't listen? I'm Hollis Polk, and I fix relationship problems. Your life, your relationship with Hollis Polk offers you practical solutions for all sorts of people problems. Listen and call in Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific, or download the podcast at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Thank you. are listening to A Progressive Moment on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Dr. Peter Bregan, and you're listening to The Conscience of Psychiatry, and you're listening also to Matthew Downing talking about the loss of her daughter, Candace, and also about what Matthew's been doing about it since. Matthew, in addition to coming to our conference to meet you, the Empathic Therapy Conference on April 13th through 15th of this year. How can people get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on Facebook, but the other way, I've had numerous people contact me through email, and I'm happy to respond to anyone with an issue or a question. Sometimes I just have parents call or email me to tell me that because of Candace's story, their child's alive, that Candace has actually saved their child's life because they knew what to look for, they knew the questions to ask, and they knew when to say no. So I can be reached at Mathy, M-A-T-H-Y, 02 at AOL.com. I'm more than happy to speak to anyone about these issues. There are several families that I still keep in touch with that, as I said, their children have either been saved or they've also suffered a loss and really didn't know where to turn. Besides being a teacher, I also do have a master's in counseling. I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist, but I am a counselor and, you know, enjoy speaking with people, and I'm always happy to help.
Give that email one more time, and then let's go on with the story of Candace, who's now an inpatient at the age of 11, suffering from serotonin syndrome. Go ahead.
Okay. Again, my email address is Mathy, M-A-T-H-Y, 02, at AOL.com.
Okay. Go on now.
Okay. At this point in Candace's short story, she is now in the hospital. Instead of being discharged after monitoring, she has now been so overdosed at the hospital with such traumatic, awful results that she is now in the PICU. The symptoms did not go away. She was brought in on a Sunday. By Tuesday, she was suffering severe head pain. And I did ask if it was possible to give her Tylenol because her headache was really severe. I will never forget, this is ingrained in my mind, the nurse brought her two blue pills and told Candace to take these pills. And I didn't recognize these pills as Tylenol, but I asked the nurse what they were, and she informed me they were Tylenol. And Candace took them. What we later found out through hospital records and through my observation was she was actually given two 50-milligram tablets of Zoloft. I was actually lied to. And the reason that I had asked was because I did not recognize these two light blue pills as any kind of Tylenol I had ever taken. I do want you to know, Dr. Bregan, that Candace was actually 12 when she died. It was January 10th, 2004. It took me 6 months, but I got up my courage to go back to the hospital and ask the pharmacy about the color of Tylenol that they would give children. The pharmacist that I spoke to said, I'm the outpatient pharmacist, but I'm going to give you the pharmacy number for the hospital. I called the hospital and talked to their head pharmacist and asked her specifically, what color is the Tylenol that you give children in the intensive care unit? And she told me they were white. And I said, well, what if you give them generic? And she said, I told you, the Tylenol is always white. I had seen these two light blue pills, and that's why I'd asked what they were. I also checked the medical billing And we were charged for those two pills that I saw administered on that Tuesday. So I know without a doubt that they gave her 100 milligrams of Zoloft, which was four times the amount she had taken.
So here's the picture. Your daughter is toxic from taking a 50 milligram tablet. She's got serotonin syndrome with fever, hallucinations, impaired consciousness. She's in very bad shape. Her heart rate's up. Her respirations are up. She's put on the pediatric intensive care unit. And at 11 a.m., a doctor writes this order.
Mm-hmm.
He writes an order, and I'm looking at it right now from my own notes on the case. He writes an order for Zoloft,
mm-hmm.
the very drug that's poisoned her, and he says ASAP, as soon as possible. The order is signed off on by a nurse, which means the nurse is saying, I gave it.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after it, there's another order, same date, same time, says hold Zoloft.
Mm-hmm.
Too little, too late.
Well, and the thing that I noticed, and the hospital was very cleverly covering their you-know-whats, those orders were written at the same exact second.
Yes.
When I looked at the orders...
Not quite possible.
Right. When I looked at the orders, it was obvious to me that the second order to hold all medications was actually written at 1 o'clock. And someone had gone back and stuck in a second one so that it now looked like it was 11 o'clock, even though the medication had already been given to her. When we asked to see the original records for that order, because it was obvious to me that they had inserted the second one to turn the 1 o'clock to an 11 o'clock, they said, oh, gee, that's too bad. The original records have all been destroyed. We just have it on microfiche or whatever. And that they no longer had the original records, which would have shown that the second order had been switched.
Now, I want to make a sort of a general comment. By the way, I'm so glad that I'm here to confirm
mm-hmm.
Matthew's story, to confirm your story, because it's so outrageous, who would believe it? And I also want to comment on how does it come about that a child sick from a drug is sent up on a ward, a psychiatric drug, and immediately the note's written to give another dose as soon as possible.
It's also upsetting to me because I had been so explicit about, please do not give her any more.
Yes. I beg them
not to.
Yeah. I think, Matthew, that this partly at least goes back to this awful reflex within psychiatric thinking, which
mm-hmm.
is give more, give more, give more, no matter what.
I agree.
It could be a chant. We could get cheerleaders, give more, no matter what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Time and again, I see a person in my legal cases and consults who has perhaps committed murder or violence or attempted suicide after being on a drug like Zoloft for maybe 4 or 5 days, or maybe there was an increase 4 or 5 days earlier or a week earlier. And the first thing that's done when he gets in the psychiatric hospital or in the jail is the drug is continued.
Mm-hmm.
The drug is continued. And the poor soul who has done this has no idea that the drug was to blame.
Mm-hmm.
Got no idea at all because the drug is spellbinding. These drugs leave people unable to talk, to understand what has happened to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, by the way, I've written up, you can read about this story, about Candace in further detail, in my book, Medication Madness.
Which I have shared with several people.
Oh, thank you for that. I really want that out in the world to save as many people as possible. Matthew, we've got about a little less than 15 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about now what happened to your daughter, and leave us enough time for you to talk about what you're doing now.
Okay, well,
and what your other daughter's doing.
Okay, well, very quickly with Candace's story, and I you know, I'm not going to go into it a lot. She ended up meeting with an adult psychiatrist who they wouldn't let me be in there with him. They made me stay in the children's waiting room while he spoke to her, although ironically in his report he said that both mother and father were present when he spoke to her, which was an outright lie. And he came back and said to me, well, I'm an adult psychiatrist. I don't work with children, but I have to tell you that Candace is brighter and more articulate than 98% of the people that I work with. And he discharged her. I was asked to have her see her child psychiatrist within the next couple of days, which we did, and they sent her on her merry way. They sent her home. We did keep her home from school because she appeared to have flu-like symptoms and was very lethargic since she wasn't sleeping and still wasn't eating. And she went to school on Friday. She had a beautiful day. Everything was great. I took her to the psychiatrist after school. She was working on homework that was due the following week. He looked at her and he said, oh, she's great. I'll see you in 2 weeks. And Candace hanged herself within the next 24 hours with absolutely no warning. We had no way of knowing. And the first thing my husband and I thought was, how could we not know this child was depressed? And it wasn't until the FDA hearings that we attended 3 weeks later that we realized, hey, she wasn't depressed. And we listened to 8 hours of people giving their testimony, and they were all saying the same thing. They had all experienced the same kind of trauma that we had. And that was when we realized we weren't alone and that we had to go out and do something about it just like these other people were. And these are people that I am still in touch with.
Well,
so
I think what happened is that your daughter's blood level was still falling from this extremely high level produced in the hospital, and the influence of these dramatic, dramatic changes in her brain chemistry, you know, drove her off the edge, as it has done to so many, many children and adults throughout the world.
And it's so sad because 1 hour before she died, we had been to her basketball game. She wasn't strong enough to play, but she wanted to cheer the other girls on. We talked about the cruise we were taking in a month. She talked about where she was going to be attending high school and who was going to be there. There never was any kind of warning, I think, even to her that this was going to happen. There was no plan. There was no premeditation about this. There was no, I want to give my belongings away or I have nothing to live for. Her grades never dropped. She died an honor student. She died with more friends. When Candace, when we had the service for Candace, there were over 1,000 people at her service. And I think the reason that she's become this poster child of death caused by SSRIs is because if it could happen to this family, this loving, functional, happy family with a kid that went to a great school with total supports, it could happen to anybody. You don't think about children coming from these kind of homes having these kind of problems. And I think that's why Candace's case, even 7.5 years later, is still being recognized, because it never should have happened, and it's such a needless, stupid death that could have been avoided. The one thing, Dr. Bragan, I would like to make mention, and this, of course, has been in the news a lot, is that we came to find out through the investigation of our court case that Candace's doctor was on the payroll for Pfizer, and he had received thousands of dollars for touting Zoloft, for going out and preaching the benefits of Zoloft. So there was also this lack of ethics as far as transparency between the doctors and the drug corporations that support them in a lot of ways financially and with, you know, great trips and lunches and golf excursions and everything else. And I'm really happy to see that transparency is finally in the news, or the lack thereof.
And this is very, very common. The docs are given materials from the drug companies, and then they go out to with a bunch of sandwiches to the local physicians, not even psychiatrists. They'll go out to the local internists and pediatricians,
right,
and sell them on the psychiatric drugs using the PR line, the talking points of the drug companies.
Exactly.
I've seen this, in a number of my cases of where there's been horrendous malpractice. I've seen the docs were buddy-buddy with the drug companies and using
and
their code words.
His comment now to that is, well, I don't do it anymore. You know, since Candace died, I don't promote Zoloft anymore. He's still using it on his clients because a couple of his clients have called me to say that they've walked out of the office after being prescribed Zoloft. And when they've specifically said to this doctor, we want to talk about Candace, his response has been, nobody's asked me about Candace. No, I can't talk about Candace. I mean, due to HIPAA, he can't. But the fact that he's still prescribing and that a couple of his would-be patients have walked out ripping up their prescription for Zoloft and then call me, have researched how to get hold of me to tell me.
Well, I don't think any child should be put on SSRI antidepressants.
I don't either.
I'll come flat out and say to folks, if a doctor wants to put your child on antidepressant drugs, don't do it. Look for a family counselor. Look for a child therapist who knows how to work with mom, dad, and the rest of the family. But if your child is on these drugs already, then you have to be very cautious and careful and hopefully get some decent clinical supervision in coming off these drugs. Matthew, tell us a little bit about what you're doing and what your other daughter is doing now in regard to psychiatric reform.
Okay, well,
I know you're very proud of your daughter.
I am very proud of my daughter. Following Candace's death, we started Caroline, who was 14 at the time that her 12-year-old sister died, in art therapy. Art therapy gave Caroline a place, a neutral person that she could speak to, by having some kind of medium to work with. It wasn't just talking, but she could also be creating and building and bringing out her issues through an art medium, to the point that there was an article done in the Washington Post about the pros and cons of using antidepressants with daughter. And the crux of it was that Caroline, through very, very careful and considerate three-day educational psychological evaluations, they did find out that, guess what, she had focusing issues following the death of her sister. No news there. I told them that going in, and I also told them, if you think you're going to medicate my daughter, I'm not even bringing her in for testing. So they said, well, you know, given the fact that you do not want your daughter on medication, we agree she does need some kind of therapy. Within 2 years, Caroline was also back on honors, graduated with honors from her school, was the class speaker, went on to school, was her sorority president. She graduated with three honor societies, cum laude, has done exceptionally well, and she is my greatest victory. She's also been very outspoken. We've been involved in a couple of documentaries. One was Prescription Suicide, which has won numerous awards, and the second was Generation RX, which is more of an expose of FDA's involvement in all of this. But she's been very outspoken and has been a mentor to kids coming off medications at college. And she's had a couple of students actually say, you have saved my life. Because of you, I got off medication. A lot of times kids going through sexual identity situations become very depressed and end up going on antidepressants because they don't know how to deal with their gender issues. There was one girl and one boy in particular that worked a lot with Caroline in that regard. She's picketed the White House with me, with posters saying Zoloft killed my sister. She's written pieces about it. She's been very, very outgoing and outspoken, but in a positive way. And she's just fantastic. She really is. I have also advocated. I've spent a lot of time working on Capitol Hill. I've become a patient safety advocate for Consumers Union and Consumers Report. I've been involved with Fight for Kids. And I have served as like a counselor or mentor to other families going through this. So I'm, you know, an open door. Also, Dr. Bragan, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but I have to give you so many thanks, heartfelt thanks, because I am a teacher, and it's so easy for me to recognize the signs now of children that are over-medicated. And I was very concerned this past year with a little girl that had developed severe tics. I had the mother have her eyes tested. Her eyesight was fine. Spoke to the mother and found out she was on a couple of different antidepressants. I told her I wanted to speak with you because of my concern. We did find out that the tics were being caused by the antidepressants, and that child is now drug-free. And every time the mother sees me, she cries and hugs me. You sent her a copy of your book signed, and she just cherishes the fact that you sent her the book, and it made a difference. So I'm seeing that getting kids off medication in school is making a huge difference in their ability to perform and just be the kids that they are without having to be medicated. And I've also worked with other kids with high anxiety and have worked with parents on ways to reduce the anxiety without medicating them. So you've been a godsend to me personally, both personally and professionally, and for that I want to thank you.
Thank you, Mathy, and I look forward to seeing you this April at our conference. Again, it's empathictherapy.org. You can also look up our advisory council, and you'll find Mathy there. We're very, very proud that she is lending support to our work, and we, of course, including my wife Ginger, who loves Mathy, we're very proud to be working with her. Let me, in the last few minutes, set this story in its broader context. Millions of children in the United States are on psychiatric drugs. No one knows the full story. In places where kids are put or are because they have some difficulties, any kind of special homes or facilities or special education, all of them pretty much are put on psychiatric drugs. In many schools, studies have found 15% to 20% of the kids are on psychiatric drugs. A very large chunk of our population of children is on psychiatric drugs.
And one other one, Dr. Bragan, is I've done some work with social workers and foster parents in the Washington, D.C.
Yes.
area, and they've said they don't even know what the kids are getting or like because they come so over-medicated to them. So that's another area of concern,
yeah,
with these drugs.
Basically all the foster children. And thanks to the evildoers at Harvard, like Joseph Biederman, many, many children now have been labeled bipolar, and as a result, they are being put on adult psychiatric drugs, antipsychotic drugs that cause horrible neurological disorders and obesity and diabetes, like Seroquel and Zyprexa and Risperdal. We are poisoning a generation of our children. I can't overemphasize the tragedy of this situation. I believe that future history, if history becomes saner, will look back upon us as child abusers through psychiatric drugs. That the real, most rampant, most damaging psychiatric abuse in America today is psychiatric prescriptions, and also the diagnosing, because the diagnosing robs the children of their dignity, robs the kids of their belief in themselves, and they grow up literally bathed in toxins. How will they know who they are as they grow up? I want to thank again Mathy Downing for being on The Conscience of Psychiatry, the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour. Mathy, you are one of the many, growing in number, consciences of psychiatry. I want to thank you for being so brave, and I want to thank you for showing that from tragedy can grow, you know, great contributions to society, both by yourself and by your daughter. So again, thank you for being on the show.
Oh, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak out again.
And that's, I believe, just your third radio show. So this woman who speaks with such conviction and knowledge and understanding is not a polished radio commentator. This is one of her first appearances on the radio. And you've done a wonderful, wonderful job. And thank you, and good night, and goodbye to our listening audience.
Okay, thank you again. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Dr. Peter Bragan Hour with a new live show every Monday evening at 5 p.m. East Coast time on the Progressive Radio Network, where each show is archived for your convenience. You can learn more about Dr. Bragan and his lifelong reform work on www.bragan.com. That's B-R-E-G-G-I-N.com.